Good afternoon. You are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 14th of January, the year 2015. Jeff Banger here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about the Giant Puppet Project with M.K. McNaughton, Patty Mitchell, Robert Lockheed, and Dan Polnow. Jody Dixon will be here to highlight the Yoga Path, a new business in the Lemon Creek area. Eric McCormick will be here to talk about Saturday's fundraiser for kids in Uganda. And Jeffrey Clown and Matt Lillard will highlight activities at Eagle Crest. We'll also talk about a mask-making workshop fundraiser this weekend at Rockwell. Weather for today, rain, high temperatures around 45 degrees. Forecast for tonight, more rain with low temperatures around 42 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, Thursday, rain. Forecast for Friday, more rain through the weekend.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. lawmakers are inching closer to getting enough votes for the Keystone XL pipeline. It passed a key procedural hurdle in the Senate this week. Native Americans are among those voicing their opposition of the project to lawmakers. With more is Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Senate Republicans are within a handful of the votes they will need to override a veto by President Obama and construct the Keystone XL pipeline, which would stretch from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. They're allied with a growing number of Democrats on the project that environmentalists say risks oil spills on Sioux lands in South Dakota. Cyril Scott is president of the Rosebud Sioux. President Scott says even Americans who aren't native should be as mindful to conserve natural resources as his own tribe.
You know, we are the stewards of this land. We are obligated by our chiefs and our grandfathers and grandmothers to take care of the Chemaka, Mother Earth, at all costs.
With the issue divided closely along party lines, and now an entirely Republican South Dakota delegation, President Scott doesn't know where to turn.
You know, but when our own people in Washington, all three of them, support the Keystone XL pipeline, that makes it a tough fight for us when we have no support without the great Senator Jim Johnson.
No matter what Congress does, President Scott has sworn that camped out Rosebud Sioux members remain vigilant and are ready to meet face-to-face any Keystone XL construction workers. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The new Oglala Lakota leader wants the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota to stay dry. John Yellowbird Steele says he is opposed to legalized alcohol on Pine Ridge. He adds he's also opposed to legalizing marijuana on tribal land, even if the federal government approves. Charles Michael Ray has more.
In the summer of 2013, Oglala Lakota voters approved a referendum aimed at ending the reservation's prohibition. But President John Yellowbird Steele says that vote should not be misinterpreted.
There was never a legalization of alcohol.
Yellowbird Steele says the vote on prohibition only gave the tribal councils the authority to legalize alcohol if it chooses to do so.
And that's all it was a referendum giving council the right to regulate and allow it again. And no, I will not allow it.
Yellowbird Steele also opposes legalizing marijuana on Pine Ridge. In recent weeks, the federal government indicated it would not hinder tribes that want to legalize marijuana in the same manner that states like Colorado have. In the late 1990s, the Pine Ridge Tribal Council voted in favor of legalizing industrial hemp. But when Oglala Lakota Alex Whiteplume attempted to grow the crop, it was confiscated by federal agents, and Whiteplume spent years battling the issue in court. Again, President Yellowbird Steele.
I was present and there when the marshals came down and cut Alex Whiteplume's hemp field. I was there objecting to them doing that. They went back and tested it. They found no THC in that hemp. Now, I personally believe they owe Alex Whiteplume the product of his hemp field they took.
Yellowbird Steele says he is still in favor of legalized industrial hemp, but not marijuana. He says they are two different things. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
In Washington State, Raquel Montoya Lewis will be sworn in Friday as Whatcom County Superior Court Judge. Montoya Lewis is from the New Mexico Pueblos of Isleta and Laguna. She has served as a judge for 16 years, most recently for some Washington tribes. Montoya Lewis has served on various state and federal committees and has taught at universities. Her work includes juvenile justice, family court, and domestic violence. Montoya Lewis was selected by Governor Jay Inslee, who will give remarks at the swearing-in ceremony. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after the hour, and you are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are here to talk about a giant puppet project, M.K. McNaughton, and guests Patty Mitchell, Robert Lockheed, and Daniel Polnow. First of all, thank you very much for coming on the station today on such a beautiful day outside.
Our pleasure.
It's great to be here.
So, M.K., if you could describe the giant puppet project, an overview, please.
Sure. The idea is to invite everybody in the community in to make giant puppets. And we are going to offer free open studio space for the next almost month down at Merchant's Wharf in the flight deck, the little restaurant at the end of the Merchant's Wharf. So people can drop in on the weekends from 10 to 5 or weeknights from 4 to 8, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, and just join in and make a puppet or help a little with another one. If you don't want to take on a whole project yourself, you might find you actually get addicted to it and want to stay. But I want people to know they can pop in once or they can come every single day for the month. It's open.
It's really open to any level, any age or level of experience, from I've never made anything in my life to professional artists. We're spinning straw into gold and creating these giant, larger-than-life puppets.
How did the idea come about?
Really from knowing Patty. Patty and I met at a conference probably 6 years ago. Mm. We co-presented on a panel, and we were both working in disability arts-related jobs. And then we stayed friends through Facebook and and have watched each other's projects and ideas and shows over the years. And Patty has been doing giant puppet projects with Daniel and Robert for, you can talk more about, but several years, and so I thought, let's bring them. I love the idea that you can make a visual arts piece and also perform in it, and dance and move. So the whole project is appealing to me, and that it combines all those art forms.
Then you want to talk a little bit about your background, and then we'll ask the others to chime in too and talk about their background.
Sure. I've been an artist in residence for 25 years, so I've been really fortunate, able to travel internationally and nationally to work with communities and building collaborative projects together, art installations, puppetry, photography, quilting, all different kinds of mediums. And, you know, the puppets and the artwork has now brought me to Juneau, which I'm just so grateful for. And I've worked with special populations, specifically people with developmental differences primarily, but lots of different populations, and it's been an attractor for other artists like Daniel and Robert to join in and make work.
Daniel, what's your background?
I've been doing puppet and mask theater since Reagan was president, maybe. And I really love it as an art form because it is a marriage of all art forms. It has visual arts and theater and music and choreography, and it's never a dull moment. I'm very excited to be here in Juneau and to see who comes to this and how this whole project is a collaboration and a dialogue. And I really want to see, I really would love to meet local artists and local people interested and see where we take it, what kind of magic we can create here. We also need a lot of materials donated, and we'll talk about that. And we never know what people are going to bring in. When they clean out their garage or their attic or that art project that never quite got made, this is the place to bring it. And we'll talk about what we need in a moment.
Robert, your background, please.
I've been an artist in residence for the last 5 years, working with Patty Mitchell. And my background started off in construction. I did plumbing and heating for 20 years. I have a mechanical engineering degree. So I'm really fascinated with the dynamic and the structure part, as well as the other pieces. But I really like the movement aspect and how it travels down the street.
Betty, how many puppets have you made?
I don't know. I know them intimately, too. I would say we've probably together have made over 200, and we just installed a puppet museum in Athens, Ohio. And to see some of the puppets on Facebook, you can just look up Honey for the Heart and see where these puppets have brought us.
How do you come up with an idea? Do you have some, when you come to the studio, you have any preconceptions? Or is it you look at the material and say, okay, I'm going to build this, and how often does it change dramatically over the course of the building process?
Sounds like you've been in a puppet residency. We dream before we begin, and then we respond to the materials and the people that, you know, come in and participate, and then it has a life of its own, you know, and basically we just find ourselves responding to opportunity constantly through our time in a place.
What happens in the end of all this assembling?
We're going to have a couple performances. We are going to be pre-show entertainment for Wearable Arts in mid-February. So for folks who've kind of wanted to be in the show but haven't thought they could pull together an entry, this is a great opportunity to make a wearable arts piece. And we've also been invited to perform at the Innovation Summit at the end of January and at the Governor's Awards for the Arts, doing a brief performance there too. So the public is all invited to participate in any of those events if people want to come and be a part. And I think that we might have, in some cases, there are puppets that somebody doesn't want to wear, so we might just need a performer or vice versa. You know, we... Mm-hmm. If you just want to perform or you just want to make a puppet, there's a place for you.
Robert, how many puppets have you made? And do you have a favorite?
I've probably helped on quite a few of the 200 that we've created at some point. Because it's a collaboration, there's a lot of different phases and pieces and parts that are put together. Which ones do I like the best? Probably the two I liked, the two that Daniel created, the 2 years, 2.5 years ago. They were made out of a lot of natural materials, roots and driftwood and stuff like that that came out of the Hocking River, right near where we live. So I really like the working with the natural materials and bringing it in with the cardboard and making it look much different than what it started.
Daniel, do you have a favorite puppet?
Yeah, I made a puppet of Baba Yaga, the witch from Russian folktales, and I really like her a lot. She has a horsetail hair, and she's kind of the size. I mean, the puppets that we make, some of them are as big as your pinky. Some of them are 40 feet long and take more than 11 people to operate, and all sizes in between. Baba Yaga is about the size of a person, and the person dresses all in black, and she's attached to your body, this puppet, but the person in the right theater lighting on stage becomes invisible, and it looks like she's moving by herself.
Well, it is a giant puppet project. And Patty, you and Robert also sculpt in balloons.
Mm.
Can you describe how you involve balloons in your work, please?
Sure. The balloons become another material, and they're so light. We're always thinking about the puppets and being light, and so that they can just dance easily. And so the puppets become headdresses. The balloons are twisted and can become headdresses or fingers and then paper mache. We use balloons as structure and as decoration a lot of the times on the puppets. And sometimes just a bunch of beautifully twisted balloons on a stick can be a lovely addition to any puppet parade.
When they go to town on those puppets, on those balloons, it's like being inside of swimming through a coral reef. Mm. It's amazing.
This has happened in several communities around the world, around the country. Can you describe some of the other events that have taken place?
Sure. Do you want to talk where we met in Minnesota?
Yeah. We met in Minneapolis at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and Robert and Patty were doing a residency there. There's an annual event where there's art things happening in hundreds and hundreds of places around the city. So you could, and it goes from dawn till dusk, and so. They had a site or an installation, and we created, that's where we met, and it was just such a great meeting of artists. We could finish each other's sentences. We came from the same thinking or tribe and in our process, And so we created something called the Palace of Wonders.
Yeah, where we crazy quilted fabrics that were collected and painted and built a roof of balloons. So you walked in and out in the, of this, like, fort. We basically built a giant fort behind the really glamorous Art Institute. And then Daniel said, oh, well, can I make some giant puppets for this? And we're like, yeah, because we live in the land of yes. But I wondered what that would be. And the installation was beautiful, and it was lovely. But when the giant puppets came, it turned into this enchanted palace of wonders for real. And I made it my business to say, okay, Daniel Paul now is going to come to Athens, Ohio. We have a huge Halloween festival, and he's going to add this touch of class that we've never experienced before. And so Daniel's come to Athens four times, making festivals with giant puppets, and it's really shifted the culture in our town. And like I said, we just installed a giant puppet museum. So this creative economy of building evidence of our culture and the spirit of our community is present, but tourists are also beginning to come to us because of these puppets and the expansion of the festivals that were already in existence.
And the storage of these giant puppets after the festivals is always a problem, and I feel like Patty and Robert have found a brilliant solution to create this puppet puppet museum that lives the rest of the year.
I imagine it might be difficult to store balloons for a long period of time.
No, oh, there's that too.
They change.
And we go to different communities and schools, and so we might, when we do these residencies that end up with a puppet pageant or show or parade or procession, often the theme is coming from that community. So it's a way to showcase or tell the story of whatever community we are doing a residency at.
All sounds like a lot of fun. When does it all start?
It starts on Friday. People can start dropping stuff off at the Merchant's Wharf. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we'll collect materials all 4 days, and then we'll see. Maybe we'll have enough. Maybe we'll need more. But Saturday, everybody's welcome to pop in and start making puppets. And you can poke around on Friday, too. I mean, people could start, really. And on Monday at the Jack, we'll be giving a little presentation in the evening from 5 to 7 that evening next Monday. And I'm going to talk a little bit about a public art class that I took, and then these guys are going to share stories from their experiences and images of other residencies, collaborative residencies. So it all starts Friday.
How can people help out? Just bring a bunch of junk?
Yeah, and maybe we should say what we are looking for. Big sticks, either organic ones or broomsticks or ski poles.
Yeah, broom handles, bamboo, ornamental driftwood of any size, from very small to ginormous. Fabric, we need all manner of fabric, from small scraps to big bolts of fabric.
Curtains, light sheer pieces to upholstery fabrics.
And these can be distressed. They can be torn. Wedding dresses, prom gowns.
Old backpacks, external frame backpacks.
Yeah, and aluminum.
Do you guys like the big foamy things that people use in pools? I've seen those on shoulder pads.
Swimmies.
Yeah, the noodles. The styrofoam fluorescent swimming noodles. We need a lot of those.
And big sheets of plastic, which are strangely hard to find in my collecting so far. You know, we all have it, and we dread getting it, but where does it go? Is it before you send it to the dump, bring it to us.
And they can be pristine or already have paint on them. We used all of these things. Again, we spin straw into gold. And sequins, anything shiny, mylar, glitter, old art supplies.
Christmas ornaments.
Christmas ornaments.
It's time of year for that.
Yeah,
and lights. We're also looking for battery-operated lights.
Oh, yeah, some of our events are at night, so we're looking for battery-operated LED lights and Christmas ornaments that we will incorporate and cobble into these giant puppets.
Actually, all of our events are at night in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
That's the beauty
of
art in Alaska. I think actually the rain is great for art. What are people going to do this weekend? You can't ski, so come make puppets.
All right, I've been talking to M.K. McNaught and Patty Mitchell and Robert Lockheed, along with Daniel Polnow, about the Giant Puppet Project. Starts at a capital city near you. Thank you. Is there a phone number people can contact you?
They can call me at 957-2061.
Anything I've forgotten to add that you might like to add?
Do you want to repeat the weekend hours again?
Yes, Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 5. And that's every weekend for the next 4 weekends. 10 to 5, Saturday, Sunday. And during the week, we'll be open 4 to 8 down at the Merchant's Wharf. So come have dinner, make art.
All right, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 14th of January, 2015. It was on this day, 1943, Franklin D. Roosevelt completed the first airplane journey by a sitting president. He went to meet Winston Churchill for a conference in Casablanca in Morocco because German U-boats made sea travel too perilous. Roosevelt left Florida in a Boeing 314 flying boat fitted out with beds and a lounge. The journey took 4 days. They had to stop for refueling. Flew from Florida to Trinidad, to Brazil, then across the Atlantic to Gambia, then on to Morocco. It's the birthday of Mary Robeson, born in Washington, D.C., 1949, novelist, short story writer, grew up in Ohio, 5 brothers, 2 sisters, ran away from home twice, once going to Florida to look for Jack Kerouac. She always wanted to be a writer. She wrote a short story called Sisters. The New Yorker published it in 1977, and within a few years, Mary Robeson began to be lumped in with writers like Raymond Carver and Amy Hempel. Came out with a few collections in the 80s, An Amateur's Guide to the Night, Believe Them, and then in the 90s was struck with a terrible case of writer's block. For about 10 years, didn't publish much of anything. And then she started driving around in her car with a tape recorder and just saying things whenever anything came in her head, and then going home and writing them down on note cards. The result was her book, Why Did I Ever?, a very short novel told in 536 very short chapters. Here's a poem for today by Mary Jo Salter entitled The Age of Reason. When can we have cake, she wants to know, and patiently we explain when dinner's finished. Someone wants seconds, and wouldn't she like to try while she's waiting a healthful lettuce leaf? The birthday girl can't hide her grief. Worse, everybody laughs. That makes her sink 2 rabbity, gapped teeth acquired this year into a quivering lip, which puts an end to tears, but not the tedium she'll take in life before she's given cake. When I turn 7 now, her grandpa says, the priest told me I'd reach the age of reason. That means you're old enough to tell what's right from wrong, make decisions on your own. Her big eyes brighten. So you mean I can decide to open presents first? Laughter again. She joins it as the reward of devil's food is brought in on a tray. You know why we were taught that? Asks my father. No. I light a candle, then another, in a chain, so we wouldn't burn in hell. A balloon pops in the other room. Distracted, she innocently misses talk of nuns' severities. I never knew at 7. By then, we were Unitarian and marched off weekly, dutifully, to hear nothing in particular. Ready, I call, and we huddle close to sing something akin, you'd have to say, to prayer. Good God, her hair, one beribboned pigtail, has swung low as she leans to trade the year in for a wish. Before she blows it out, the camera's flash captures a mother's hand, all hope, no blame, saving her from the flame. The Age of Reason, a poem by Mary Jo Salter from her collection Sunday Skaters, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. and by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 26 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on the Juneau Afternoon. Jeff Brown, I'm your host. And the next guest is Jody Dixon. She's opening up a business called the Yoga Path in the Lemon Creek area here on Friday, January 16th. Is her opening day. Jody, thanks for coming down the station today.
Thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here.
So in terms of your business, can you describe what yoga is?
Yes. I think that yoga can, in its most basic definition, can be described as union. And as far as everything that's done on the yoga mats, which is a lot of the yoga that's practiced in North America, you're looking for initially a union between your breath and your body.
How did you discover yoga?
I had some pretty serious and ongoing back pain from playing hard. And when you play hard in different activities, sometimes things don't go as planned and there's injuries and et cetera, et cetera. You end up with back pain. And it was a long-term road to success in healing my back.
And does yoga fit in with recovery?
I think when you've had some sort of injury or trauma or pain, and you can have that opportunity to have the union of breath and body and move at much deeper layers, then you start to heal from the inside out rather than just, you know, a physical therapist can really help you in the acute stages and give you specific exercises, but yoga can help bring the body together, right? The union of all the muscles working together.
Is it any time preventative rather than just recuperative?
Definitely. Definitely. Even just the breath work, even just in a comfortable sitting position, working on different breathing activities can build core strength. And I just had a student this weekend who was in a seated breathing activity and shared with me afterwards that she didn't really feel like there was much happening, but when she laid down, she could feel how much her stomach and core muscles had worked.
Let's say someone walked into your business, what would they see?
Fairly clean and simple area. I have a nice little reception area, and then the door to the studio is what you would see. And when you go in the studio, just a nice, clean, clear space that is warmed to about 75 degrees so that you're really comfortable and you can start to sweat as you begin your yoga practice. And I hope just a feeling of comfort.
Tell me what goes on during a normal yoga session.
Usually, we begin with people finding a comfortable sitting position or a comfortable position of some kind, and often some verbal cues to have you think about your breathing. Maybe some ideas or activities to get you to move in a different, specific way and breathe a little bit different rather than just your regular breath that you don't think about. Getting you thinking about the breath and maybe lengthening it, and then eventually getting into some postures. And depending on the class, they could be very gentle postures held for longer periods of time or fairly vigorous, flowing from one pose to the next, creating a lot of heat and sweat.
Where's the Yoga Path located?
We are on Shawn Drive, and so just down the street from the Alaska Brewing Company. We're on the right-hand side, so very close to Costco. Also, if you were just about to drive up the hill to Home Depot, you could hang a right, and you'd almost land right at our step.
And what are the hours of your grand opening this Friday?
5:30 to 7, and first half hour is a presentation by me on what is yoga. So a little bit more information and hopefully answering some questions to alleviate fear. I think anytime people try something new, there can be fear, and hopefully giving people some answers that they feel they can try it, because I think everybody can do yoga, just finding the right class that suits you.
What is the Yoga Path designed for? Beginners, intermediate, advanced?
Good question. I wanted to have a fairly full spectrum class as much as, or studio as much as possible. So I have everything from beginning and intro to yoga classes all the way through to advanced classes and teacher training. So hopefully people of a variety of levels can find a class that is suitable for them.
What are your hours?
Depends on the day. Some days we start at 5:45 a.m. And the latest class at this time is 5:30 p.m. and it ends at 7 p.m.
It's a long day for you.
I don't teach all the classes. So usually if I do the 5:45 a.m., I don't have to teach a later evening class.
You'd be a candidate for yoga yourself.
Yes.
All right, Jody Dixon, thank you for coming by and talking about the grand opening of the Yoga Path this Friday, January 16th.
Thank you, Jeff.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, we have been open since the end of October, but it didn't have a grand opening. So this is an open house. Hopefully it's grand, but we have been open for a few months and lots of people are finding us. So those who haven't had a chance to check us out, they can come look at it and meet the teachers, ask questions without the commitment of coming to a class just yet.
Website and phone number?
Yes. The website is ontheyogapath.com and a phone number for more information is 907-209-8136.
Jody, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thirty few minutes past the hour here on KTUO News in Juneau. Jeff Brown here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Erica McCormick and Melissa McCormick here to talk about a fundraiser for Ugandan children. Thank you for coming by.
Hi, thank you. So my name is Erica McCormick. My mom's here with me. This weekend we have an event at Suite 907. It's called Africa Night. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. And it's $10 admission. You can buy tickets in advance from Suite 907. Or you can buy them at the door. It's $10 either way. And it's a big concert. We have Cousin Curtis, a local musician, coming in to sing for us. And there'll be authentic African food. And I'll be selling some of my artwork there as well. And we'll be taking donations and talking about our service trip this June, giving information about what we'll be doing and where the money is going and who we're benefiting and everything like that.
How did you discover this need in Uganda?
Last year, I traveled to Uganda with a local Rotarian, Michelle Strickler, and some other students from my school at Thunder Mountain. And we were helping out in a primary school for children in Uganda and also in some of the hospitals with young women and their new babies. We brought over clothes and books and things for the children and read to them, taught them, and just gave prayers for the women. And so when we go back, we'll be staying in the home for pregnant teens, and so we'll be bringing baby clothes for them, and we will also be helping out in the same primary school, Rock of Ages. We'll be teaching English and basic math and stuff to the preschool, and we also have collected a whole bunch of dental care. We have some toothbrushes and toothpaste that got donated to us, as well as clothes and books and stuff that we're bringing over. So now we're just working on the financial need, and we're doing that through our fundraiser this weekend. So, yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
How did you go over there in the first place?
Yeah, we went with Michelle. It was last March. We all fundraised. We did a big ugly sweater run. We made a lot of money for that. So that's where most of our money came from. We also just had to fundraise individually, and we pulled it off, and it was a lot of fun. We were there for 2 weeks, and it was a really eye-opening experience, and I made lots of friends. So now when I go back, I'll be able to stay with some of those friends. A lady named Lizette Casigua, she's the one who started an organization that helps those young women. It's called Women in Crisis, and I'll be staying in her home for most of the time. The other time I'll be staying with the director of the Rock of Ages School. Her name is Betty Waswa. I'll be staying with her also. So, yeah.
What impressed you is the need for as much money as you could possibly gather?
What was that?
What impressed you as far as the need goes for it?
Well, the biggest thing is there's a huge unemployment rate there. People just aren't able to make an income at all. There's about 75-80% unemployment rate. So there are no jobs, and it's really hard on the people there. So one of the things that is really great from what we're doing is when we are helping the young women in the home for pregnant teens, we're also they have sewing machines there, so we're going to be teaching them how to sew so that they can start their own little income so that they can provide for their children. So that's probably the biggest thing that we'll be working on. So, yeah.
Must make you feel pretty good to do such good work around the world.
Yeah, yeah. It's a life-changing experience, and it's totally made me appreciate everything that I have, for sure. So,
Erica, can you please describe what's going to be happening again this Saturday night?
Yeah, so this Saturday night, Suite 907, it's called Africa Night, and Cousin Curtis will be there doing a concert. There'll be food, music. I'll be selling artwork. It'll be lots of fun. So 7 to 9, it's $10. You can buy tickets now at Suite 907, or you can buy them there at the door. So, yeah.
And let's say somebody wasn't able to make it, but they'd still like to help out your cause.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that people can do that?
Yeah, if you're not able to make it, the best way, you can find me on Facebook. My name is Erica McCormick. I also have a page on Facebook called Art for Africa, and that kind of explains more about my trip, and it also has paintings that I sell to earn money. And also, if you want to contact me directly, you can call or text me at 907-209-8437.
All right, Erica, thank you so much for coming by, and thank
yep.
you for the work that you're doing.
Is there thank any, you.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Just thank you so much for having me, and I hope that you guys can all show up this weekend, and if not, just give me a call if you want to learn more. Again, just call me or find me on Facebook.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Yep, thank you.
time is 40 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on the Juneau Afternoon. Our next guests are Justin Knutson and Matt Lillard here to talk about things going on up at Eagle Crest. Thank you very much for coming out of the station today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So how's the swimming up there?
Oh, it's interesting. Lugeing, swimming. There's some ice. There's some snow. There's a fair amount of rain. Unfortunately, I just came down from the mountain, and we just announced about 5 minutes ago that we're going to close the mountain tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday as well, to let the mountain drain and try to recover as best we can from these wet and warm conditions. So we went from having a lot of fun up on the upper mountain and Porcupine area last weekend to obviously a lot of rain, both in town and up on the mountain the past couple days. And it certainly hurt the amount of snow that we have and the conditions. So we'll be closed the next 2 days, and then on Saturday and Sunday we will be reopening, definitely reopening the Porcupine area with the Porcupine chairlift, and having some great events up there and having people ski in that area. And then we're going to evaluate the upper mountain over the next 2 days. That being said, it's pretty unlikely that we'll have the upper mountain open, but you never know. We might be able to work some miracles and get something going, but I'm not all that confident. So it's unfortunate, and you know, I certainly wish all this water was coming down as snow. It should be in winter, but this winter has not cooperated yet, and we're still making the best of it. But we are going to have to close the next 2 days and reopen Porcupine on Saturday.
It's really pretty obvious just by the title that when you drain the hill.
Yeah, so I mean, all this rain and when it hits the snow, it, you know, it takes longer to percolate through the snowpack, and so right now you'll see kind of rivers and bubbling aquifers coming up, you know, up through the Muskeg, up through the snow. And the longer you can stay off of it before you drive on it with a snow machine and a snowcat to groom it, the better the snow conditions are going to be. So, for instance, I was walking up the Porcupine area about an hour ago, and you can see areas where it's water. It must be traveling, coming through the snow and traveling down on top of the Muskeg and the ground, and then coming up when it hits a bump. And we want to try to get that water to get out of there before we drive on it and try to repair things. It just makes for a better product when we do get open. It helps preserve the snow because when it's this wet and you drive a big, heavy machinery on it, it just takes more of the snow away faster. And so we just made the choice that to let it drain out and let that snow get a little bit drier before we go ahead and try to repair everything that needs repairing and get going for the weekend.
My prediction is it will snow sometime this winter.
Certainly. You know, it's January 15th, and that seems late. But winter can go quite a long ways. And, you know, we've had these winters before. I have not been privy to them. This is my first. So it's certainly an interesting experience. One I don't wish happens again anytime soon. But it will start snowing, and we're going to be ready when it does. And, you know, we haven't announced anything yet, but we're definitely working out ways to get some skiing time back. And I think we've got some creative ways to do that. So when the snow does come, you know, we're going to try to add some time and different creative ways to get people skiing, you know, more than just our regular schedule that we would in another year. So stay tuned for that. And that obviously depends a lot on when the snow finally does come. But we're going to try to, you know, add as much value as we can to this season. I still think we've got a lot of time left, and we all want to get skiing as much as anybody.
Do you have any figures at the top of your head about what the latest Eagle Crest is open?
I believe the latest was about February 21st in the 2002-2003 season. I think they were open for a short period in December and then basically shut down for all of January, most of February, and then opened up late February and then finished out the season through March and into April. So, yeah, it's gone all the way into February before. I'm really hoping that doesn't happen.
I'm with you. Justin, you're here to talk about an event coming up.
Well, you know, like Matt and I were just talking about, there's still a lot of fun to be had on the mountain, especially on the Porcupine Chair. And one of those fun events is the Learn to Adapt Day on Sunday, this Sunday, up at Eagle Crest. And for those that aren't familiar, the ORCA program, we're the recreation arm of SAIL, the adaptive recreation arm of SAIL. So our goal is to get folks out skiing and snowboarding regardless of their disability or their ability. We have all types of different types of pieces of equipment, sit skis and other kind of support apparatus. And we really want to invite the community to come up on Sunday to try out this equipment for free. We'll have certified adaptive ski instructors on hand. ORCA staff will be there. People can try out a sit ski or other equipment or ask questions. You know, you don't have to have a disability to do it. It's just an opportunity to see what adaptive skiing and snow sports are all about.
How long does it take somebody who needs to adapt to get the hang of it?
You know, it really varies. Sometimes we've given somebody a monoski lesson before where they're, you know, in a half day, they're picking it up and balancing and able to ski down the mountain with either little to no assistance by themselves. For some people, it's trying to figure out which piece of equipment best fits their needs. So maybe they don't need a sit ski. Maybe they can stand up, but do they need stand-up outriggers, which are kind of like forearm crutches on skis, or do they need do they need more support? Do they need hands-on support? We try to meet people where they're at and really identify their strengths and kind of play with those. So this Sunday is really a great opportunity to get out and, you know, we'll have all of our equipment out for people to try or to look at or to ask questions. You know, as long as you have a lift ticket to get on the chairlift, you're welcome to come try out any of the equipment that we have.
And this is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month.
That's correct. It's a great month. It's a national program to get people out of all abilities and techniques, skiing and riding in the mountains. So we're definitely a big focus of ours. And this day we have, this weekend, the Learn to Adapt Day is our fifth annual event of this nature. So it's a great relationship. And the relationship with Eagle Crest and Orca and Sail has gone on a lot longer than that. And it's a great one to have. And it'll be a lot of fun. And then the other big thing coming up here in January as part of Learn to Ski Month is also our Learn to Ski Weekend. And this is going to be our 34th annual Learn to Ski Weekend coming up here at the end of January. And we just want to make sure people remember that applications are due the end of or coming up middle of next week for that event. And it's a great event. It gets a lot of people out skiing and riding, or kids, I should say, for free. So check that out at skijuno.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Matt. A little interest in Knutson. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
We'll see you up there on Sunday and Saturday.
Yeah, come on up. It's, you know, especially if you haven't been skiing or riding before. The Porcupine area, despite the lack of snow, is actually quite good shape. It will be for the weekend. The snow is going to be soft. The temperatures are very mild. And the skiing and riding to learn, too, should be great. So we look forward to seeing everyone soon, and we'll see you when we get snow.
All right, thanks for coming down.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. A cry of the kittiwake rings out across the northern ocean. Kittiwakes were well known to even the earliest northern seafarers. Named for its rhythmic calls, the black-legged kittiwake, as it's known in North America, is a dapper oceanic gull. The tips of its pale gray wings look as though they've been dipped in black ink. Unlike many gulls, kittiwakes spend most of the year at sea and are seldom seen inland. Vast numbers live on the Bering Sea, where they are by far the most abundant gull. Ornithologist Arthur Bent wrote of nesting kittiwakes, "This species is always associated in my mind with the dark, frowning cliffs of the frozen north, which tower for hundreds of feet above the stormy, ice-bound seas until lost to sight in shrouds of mist and fog. A safe retreat in which to raise their hardy offspring." In winter, black-legged kittiwakes can be found along the west coast from southern Alaska to Baja California, and along the east coast from Labrador to Florida. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It's about 50 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Evelyn and Maddie here, Evelyn Bass and her daughter Maddie, here to talk about a fundraiser coming up this weekend at Rockwell featuring masks. Thank you for coming by the station.
Thanks for having us.
Maddie, welcome to the station.
Say thank you.
Thank you.
So what's going on? This is Friday or Saturday?
This is going to be Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. at Rockwell. And it's an event, it's just in time for Mardi Gras. It's how to make your own leather mask. So it's actually an incredibly fun art form where you learn how to design, cut, and mold a piece of leather to your own face and how to work the leather to create texture to it so that you can actually use it for yourself or for your children for playtime. It's really a fun thing to do. Very tactile.
Do you have to be an experienced person to do this?
Not at all. No, I did it for the first time a couple weeks ago and had a blast and made what a mask that I really love, but it was my first time ever working with leather. And Maddie, do you think the masks are beautiful? You've seen the purple mask and the one that I made. What do you think about them?
I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This particular event is focused more on adults, although there will be a couple of older kids there. But it is the kind of event where we're envisioning people coming, a group of friends, you know, having a few drinks and being led through this, being led through this, learning how to do this.
I have another question, but it just popped out of my brain.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, this is hooked up by Heather Ridgway.
Yes, Heather has generously donated her expertise. So she's the person that I know of in town who knows this art form, and she makes beautiful masks. I know some people may have seen them. I know she sold some at the Bethany Behrman Scholarship Fund, and that's where I first saw one, I think. My husband actually bought one, and it's beautiful. And so Heather has donated her time to do this as a fundraiser for the co-op preschool. She's also bringing her art club students who have been led through this process and are going to be co-teaching it, assisting and helping people. And then they are also going to benefit from it as well.
And this is a benefit for the Juneau Cooperative Preschool?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
I also went to the dentist.
The co-op preschool is lovely. It's a really loving atmosphere. It's the kind of preschool where parents are encouraged to be involved. And actually, each parents have work days, so not only are they welcome to come any day they were able to, but there's a few work days throughout the year that for them to volunteer. And I have learned a ton as a parent. Just being at the preschool and watching the teachers, I've learned a ton about supporting creative play for this age and also about how to resolve conflict in really peaceful ways that just sort of merge right in with the flow of what they're playing. And it's been incredible for me. This is my first child, and it really helped me just to see what the teachers are doing and to feel welcome in that atmosphere. And it's a very sweet, loving atmosphere, too, so it's very nice. It's very much a community.
And Manny, what did you learn today at school?
What did Rhonda teach you today at school?
To sew.
Yeah, what did you sew?
A face warmer.
A face warmer. And what is your face warmer? What is it? What have you been playing today?
Five ravens.
Yeah. And who taught you to spell your name?
Rhonda.
Teacher Rhonda. Anything else you want to say about preschool?
Is it fun?
Answer about your what? No. We're talking about preschool. did you have fun at preschool? Do you have fun?
Yes.
Anything else you'd like to say about preschool? Okay. Thank you, Maddie.
How about a little bit more about the process of making the masks?
Yeah. So it's, I just was led through it a few weeks ago, kind of to see if it was something we could lead people through in just a couple of hours. And so Heather has gotten a large piece of leather, a hide, and then you sort of will be given some examples of masks that people have made, and you'll be able to cut out a piece of leather that seems about the size that you'd like. And then, and she'll teach you, there's some like finer points to it, like how to cut out the eyes, how to make it symmetrical. And then a lot of it is just your own creativity. But some of the examples are really wonderful. Like her art students are obviously, many of them are just very creative naturally. And so just immediately being led through it, they were doing really cool things with the leather, like layering it and just doing a beautiful job with making their first mask. And so those are actually going to be there as examples for people to see the kinds of things that they can do and give inspiration. And then my favorite part of it was working the leather when you actually are at the very end, once you've made your design, cut it all out, it's fitting to your face, you can actually, like I said, make a lot of texture to the mask so that it looks very realistic. So I think that's a really neat piece about it. And, do you have any more questions about?
Well, it's the fundraiser for the Juno Co-op Preschool, so it must cost some money to get in.
It does. If it's one person coming, it's $30. It's $50 for a cup for two people. And it's best to do it in advance. Is it okay if I give the email and phone number for that? So the email is junoartistforanight@gmail.com. The phone number is 907-617-9421. Angela is the person who's organizing it, who you'll be buying tickets from. And it is possible, if you're just out on Saturday night, absolutely come by. If we probably will have a few spaces left, but if we don't, you're welcome to just join the party, have a couple of drinks or appetizers or food, and enjoy the atmosphere. It's going to be really fun. But again, it's junoartistforanight@gmail.com or 907-617-9421 to buy tickets in advance.
All right, Evelyn and Maddie, thank you so much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Let me just see. I think that's it. I really just want to thank Rockwell for hosting us and thank Heather for taking the time to donate her expertise to this.
All right, thanks for coming down today.
Thank you.
About 2 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned to KRNN or KTVO News in Juneau. Tomorrow at 3 in the Juneau afternoon, Shona Osterholt will be your host. She'll talk with performers from the Intergalactic Nemesis Troupe performing Thursday at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium. We'll get a preview of Justin Wilson's presentation for tomorrow night, A Week in England, Cycling the Coast and Castles Route. We'll highlight the Generator Theatre Company's production of A Lifetime to Master, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That writer's almanac, Birdnote Music and More, tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 40 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, more rain with high temperatures around 43 degrees. Thursday night and Friday, more rain with low temperatures around 37 degrees. Highs around 39 degrees. Looks like rain is predicted through the weekend and through Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on Trans.